Metal music has a rich history. It was discovered by the Beatles when they released their groundbreaking song Helter Skelter in 1968. This gave birth to many legendary bands such as Black Sabbath, Slayer, Metallica, and Slipknot. Metal has radically disrupted the world of music and the peace of mind of suburban mothers, struggling to understand why their teenage sons are listening to guttural screaming, double bass drums, and soaring guitar riffs instead of James Taylor or Josh Groban. Experts estimate the average global IQ has been lowered a few points due to brain damage from individuals headbanging at concerts and getting elbowed in the face in mosh pits. Despite that, metal music has defined multiple generations, acting as an escape for individuals who feel trapped in the mediocrity, which is fiat society. It harnesses the carnal rage of those struggling to pay taxes, helps individuals focus during school and work, and terrifies soccer moms who just want their children to listen to something a little less angry. But metal music is more than anger. It is something that speaks deep into the human soul. It is the music of the marginalized, the downcast, the outcast. It is the sacred music of the ungovernable and non-compliant. There have been many metal bands throughout history, but in the year 2025, there is one that stands above the rest. Combining progressive metal, complex choir arrangements, and influences from classical music, Skardust has taken the world by storm. Critics and people with brains have been raving about the sensational band. Rolling Stone magazine described lead singer Noah Grumman as the Taylor Swift of modern metal music. Now they have released the hit new single R.I.P. with a groundbreaking music video featuring Bitcoin themes, honoring Bitcoin's creator, Peter Todd. Critics describe the music video as the intersection between the musical genius of Ludwig van Beethoven with the visual genius of Steven Spielberg. Now they have chosen the Bugle's groundbreaking show, Behind the Music, as their debut Bitcoin podcast to discuss their latest release. Get ready to dive deep as the world's greatest journalists interview some of the brains behind the success of the world's greatest metal band.
Welcome to this edition of Behind the Music, the debut episode of Behind the Music. Today, I have joining me two very wonderful people. I've got Metal Star and a video genius who does all the incredible video work for, I would say, the premier metal band of today, Skardust. Now, Lahav, how are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hello, GM.
Happy to be here. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I've smoked, I think. It's morning here in the United States. I've already smoked about a pack and a half of cigarettes. Got another pack and a half to go for the rest of the day. But I've just been sitting here jamming to Skardust. It's rough because, you know, I have to listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. And I've been distracted because I can't help but listening to 40 hours of Skardust a week as well. So it's, I feel like my workload has increased dramatically over the last couple of weeks.
Oh, wow.
That's the worst thing Skardust has ever done to somebody. Ruined their 40
I'm
hours.
I'm ashamed.
Well, the people at Skardust are doing their 40 hours.
Yeah. So you were saying Skardust listens to 40 hours of Bitcoin's podcast a week.
Yeah, I mean, what could be more important? I think, I mean, as a musician, you know, I work in music. So when I don't listen to music, what other things are there really?
There's only 40 hours left to do. And in the car, and on break from rehearsals. You have to get in your 40 hours. It's really tough. I can see why you're struggling with the Scardist and 40 hours. It's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, there's all these like tactics you can use to, you know, cram the both in. So I do a lot of writing, and it's kind of distracting to listen to Bitcoin podcasts as I write. You know what I mean? So that's like one of the great opportunities to listen to Scardust. I feel like it just amplifies my writing skills quite a bit. I've always found that to be the case with metal. For me, metal music is very similar to classical music. As far as like the song structures, it gets me in the zone. It feels like it increases my creativity quite a bit, whereas other types of music don't as much. But yeah, so starting off the interview, I want to talk about your song Rip that just came out. It's a very good song. I played it in the intro. There is a music video that goes along with it that features a lot of Bitcoin themes and it's credited to Satoshi Nakamoto, to Peter Todd.
Yeah, he did everything on that video.
Yeah, I mean, that's super cool. I mean, I think there's two segments or two parts to go off of this. So there's the song itself that I'd like to hear a little bit about the inspiration of, and then the music video as well. What led Scardust to want to make a music video about Bitcoin in the first place?
I did.
Okay. The song is about separating with somebody for their own sake, and people can relate to it on many levels. It could be a romantic story. It could be about someone who died, or a friend, any relationship that is, you know, breaking off for the other person's sake. We were brainstorming ideas for what kind of music video would fit this concept. And we didn't want to go with the obvious or the cliche.
Yeah, the relationship cliche. It's just...
And then Laha had this epiphany.
One of my rules for making music videos is not to do anything literal. So relationships is off the table, and I wouldn't do something cliche, kitchen, literal. And it took at least 2 weeks of brainstorm to just have it... You know, just click. This is about Satoshi leaving. He was with us for like 2 years. No, 4 years. Ish. Three and something. But then he had to leave and he did the most heartbreaking thing I could imagine anybody could ever do. For the sake of us having Bitcoin. Real Bitcoin, not some stupid thing that can be changed. And by him leaving and... in my opinion, destroying himself, basically, which is all the death metaphors in the song, the persona of Satoshi, never mind. It's killing off your own persona with all the credit involved and probably all of your keys drilling into your hard drives and continuing on in life without anybody knowing, so it fits. And if you read the lyrics for the song, it's hard to listen to because to hear them when you're not in front of the lyrics because of her growling, their amazing growls.
I thought you were saying that it's hard to listen to it while listening to 40 hours.
Oh, that's also very difficult. But if you sit down with the lyrics and listen to the song, you can actually see it's about Satoshi. They didn't even realize. And then it came to me. So yeah, we did... our own depiction of a cool locksmith, hacker, painter, artist, metal Satoshi Nakamoto having to leave. And we used real historic communications and a lot of Bitcoin Easter eggs in this very high budget music video.
Let's see if you can spot all of them.
We can talk about them as well. And I hope more Bitcoiners notice this and dig into it.
I do think it's pretty incredible. You know, Satoshi gave away, I mean, think about how many Bitcoin podcasts Satoshi could have gone on. How many conferences?
Exactly, I knew. Wow. Mm-hmm. So many hours. That's a million hours.
Way more than 40 per week.
A million hours probably by now. You just drilled into it. Although, maybe he has done some podcasts and we just don't know about it, which is why we should give 40 hours per week listening to podcasts, because you never know, baby, you're listening to Satoshi.
That is a good point. So yeah, I got the music video pulled up. So it starts out with man sitting in a dark room with some computers in the background. It's got the the Times article, Chancellor on the brink of the second bailout of banks.
The real bailout for banks. The real copy of the paper, by the way. One of them, one of the eight. I mean, maybe not really. The real one may be drowned in a boating accident. But yes, we have some real stuff there on that video. I mean, we had to give it back, but Satoshi lent us some stuff. You know, he even painted his own painting of Michael Saylor. Everybody knows Satoshi invented Michael Saylor. We had an actual painting Satoshi painted of Michael Saylor doing There Is No Second Best acid meme, you know. And he donated it to the video. We gave it back.
Yeah, I'm trying to go through and look for the Easter eggs. There's a lot of quick cutscenes.
Mm-hmm. It's very, it's a metal.
Let me see.
The computers themselves, I mean, everything is supposed to be historically accurate. I mean, apart from maybe the Bitcoin magazines we have on his table, but the computers themselves are from 2011. The hardware, everything. He has a Minidisc on his table. He listens to his metal on Minidisc. Everybody knows Satoshi used to listen to metal on Minidisc.
I mean, I think Satoshi would have to listen to metal to be inspired enough to create something like Bitcoin. I think there's only...
For sure.
What type of metal bands do you think Satoshi listened to primarily? You guys weren't around. I think you started in 2015, correct? So you weren't around at that point.
Probably prog, Dream Theater, right?
Math metal. Satoshi, what metal? It's hard to tell. Probably Skardust. I mean, everybody knows he used to listen to Skardust. Even before they existed, he invented Skardust.
I mean, he painted our album covers. It's like...
Oh, yeah, he did paint them in the video.
Mm-hmm.
In the video, he painted all our album covers.
Yeah, they're cool. There as Easter eggs as well. Everybody knows Satoshi was an artist. I mean, there's no debate about that. He also knew how to pick locks. Did it for fun.
How do you know that?
You can see it in the video. It's mm-hmm. just his hobby.
So one of the Easter eggs you have here is, was this Bitcoin Talk or was this an email where he's writing, it would be nice to get this attention and any other?
That's probably, in my opinion, the post he did. On Bitcoin Talk, and because of this post, I mean, this was his way of saying, I need to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
WikiLeaks has kicked the hornet's nest. The swarm is headed towards her. Is when Assange started getting Bitcoin, when they closed all his bank accounts. And that gave the first headlines about Bitcoin. And I think that's when Satoshi decided he needs to F off. And then he started his last communications everywhere. And in my opinion, that's how I see it.
Yeah, that's a really important part of Bitcoin history. You know, I consider myself, you know, a peer of Julian Assange. I've got a lot of respect as the John Galt of journalism. I'm not quite at his level yet, but I hope to be some point in the future. But he really was a pioneer when it came to giving Bitcoin a use case of showing very non-compliant journalism. That's one of the reasons why I have a lot of respect for Assange. These Easter eggs are difficult because they're so quick. I just skipped over it twice.
I actually forgot or didn't have time while we were filming to put in the Silk Road Easter egg. There was one ready, but we just didn't have time. It was a crazy day. We had 20 people on set. We had 2-hour delay, huge crew. So that was neglected, sadly. But yeah,
you have the next Easter egg that I see, and I might be skipping over some, but the next one I see about 44 seconds in is Bitcoin Talk, where it's talking about Gavin visiting the CIA.
Underneath that post, by the way, is the first comment on Bitcoin Talk for that Satoshi post. is Manny Rosenfeld. He's also, for a split second, you can see his name on the screen. He's actually there. We know this guy. He's a pioneer in Israel. He was there in Bitcoin from the beginning. He is not Satoshi, he would say, but he's a really, really good person. He has the IBA, the Israeli Bitcoin Association. He has actually stepped down from public work after 10 or 12 years of being the Bitcoin face here. But he was the first one to respond to that. And yes, and Satoshi posted that on Bitcoin Talk. And I believe he already knew. I mean, Gavin posted that on Bitcoin Talk. I'm sorry. I believe Satoshi already knew that Gavin was going to do that. That's what I meant, right? It's Gavin's post. So I think Satoshi already knew before Gavin posted that, and that's why he was in a hurry. Because Gavin posted that, if I'm not mistaken, after Satoshi has already disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Or right around that time. So they probably talked about it between them. I mean, it's a speculation, but that's what I'm going with in the video. I mean, that's the story we're telling. Yeah, I mixed them up. I'm not in front of it.
Yeah, I...
What else?
It's an interesting post to include in the music video. You know, one of the challenges that the Beagle has been combating is that the media is very controlled by the CIA, and we've been trying to push back against that as much as possible. And it is interesting to see the conflict in Bitcoin's history. As this post was probably one of the things that spooked mm-hmm. Satoshi away from Bitcoin.
So I believe it did spook them, but I think it already spooked them before it was even published. I mean, that's my point there.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that Gavin says, I'll be paid a one-time fee of $3,000 to cover my expenses and pay me for my time. But I don't want any Gavins on the CIA payroll rumors to get started.
And then Manny Rosenfeld tells him, you should ask for payment in Bitcoin. Should have asked for payment in 40 hours per week coin, but didn't exist back then.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ways that, you know, I kind of root out the spooks is if I think somebody's a spook and they're trying to offer me payment, is I tell them to pay me in cigarettes, and they don't ever want to do that. You can kind of root somebody out that way if they're willing to transact non-KYC cigarettes. But we do know that spooks use cryptocurrencies, specifically Monero, very frequently. So Noah, I want to hear a little bit about the background of the song. So you're talking about leaving somebody. So who wrote this? Was this you that wrote this one, or was this Orr?
It was mainly me, I'd say, but then we kind of developed it together.
Mm-hmm.
First with Orr and then with the rest of the band. Yeah, and it was influenced by actually not just one story, but the general concept of leaving someone for their own sake. And I had this riff in my mind. It was not supposed to be anything Middle Eastern, but it was just supposed to be a heavy guitar riff. But as soon as Ol heard it, he heard a Turkish string orchestra playing this riff. And then we decided to kind of make this, you know, sort of Middle Eastern Oriental metal prog extravaganza thing. And then we invited a Turkish string orchestra to join and play with us. So it became kind of like a whole new style for us to explore.
Is it one you think you'll continue on with going forward, or?
Maybe. I mean, we like to explore different things. Yeah, I think there are obviously Middle Eastern influences, but also a lot of Western, classical, jazz. Like, we like to explore many, many things. So I don't think I'll ever say no to anything when it comes to music.
As long as it's good.
As long as it's good.
Yeah, I mean, this really is a fascinating song and music video, because it really does go through early Bitcoin history. And I think a lot of people don't get into Bitcoin, that listen to, there's kind of like a hero's journey when it comes to getting into Bitcoin, right? Where people get interested in NGU, which leads them to Bitcoin podcasts, which leads them to Bitcoin history. But the amount of work and context to really appreciate the value of a video like this, there's a lot of work that goes behind it.
Yes, I have noticed nobody who's in Bitcoin from 2017 onwards even understands what the video is about, in my opinion. Hmm. They should do their homework.
They have to listen to 40 hours per week.
Yeah, I think you only listen to 40 hours per week once you've reached the point. You finished your shitcoining phase. And yeah, maybe the 40 hours per week that the podcast these days are... I mean, the podcasters themselves are a bit noobish sometimes. That's why you have to listen to
I actually had a question about it. Does it count if you listen to shitcoin podcasts?
No.
As a, you know, as a learning experience?
No.
Not as a...
No, it kills your brain cells.
It's not... It doesn't count as a part of your 40 hours.
Not in my opinion, no. It deducts hours. It's like a penalty.
Yeah, I feel like listening to shitcoin podcasts is kind of like vaping or smoking menthol cigarettes. It doesn't really count.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
So it is funny. So the music video ends with Satoshi taking a drill and drilling through some hard drives. And then there's a little Easter egg of a Michael Saylor, kind of a goofy photo of him in the background.
Yeah, Satoshi himself painted, yes. Everybody knows Satoshi invented Michael Saylor.
What is this painting? It looks like a mother holding hands with her child. You can kind of barely see. I can share my screen so you know what I'm talking about.
So I know what you're talking about. That was the original concept idea. Basically, Satoshi is destroying his persona to move on to other things, as he said in one of the last emails he to Mike Hernia. But yeah, so what are other things? I mean, if he realized that the spooks are on him, or he has to kill the persona, maybe he has a wife and child, maybe he wants a wife and child, maybe he's going back to his old life, maybe he wants a different life, maybe he wants a family. I mean, he's painting his deepest desires to get him through this, I mean, character suicide, I guess. So it's open to interpretation if it's him and his mother, him as a child, going back to his old life, or maybe his family going back to them. But that's the idea. That's his last painting after painting Michael Saylor and all the Scardust artwork. He was an artist.
Very cool. So, in talking with you before the interview over the last few weeks, you guys have been into Bitcoin for some time. Stardust tours all over the place. You've participated in music competitions in Asia and in Europe. You talk to a lot of musicians. Do you see an overlap in an interest with Bitcoin, or are you guys kind of an anomaly when it comes to this? And do you try to orange pill other people, or you just kind of keep it to yourself?
I'll just say I'm not a musician. I'm not from Scardust, the band. I'm not part of it. I'm just, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm a shutaf. I mean, a
partner.
I do stuff with them. And I think, I mean, people in Scardust are OG Bitcoiners, but I think I'm the eccentric orange pilling part of it. I had a deal with them, with the band, where I can rent out. I mean, I don't rent out, but some of the payment I get is real estate space on their laptop that is on stage for putting on stickers, Bitcoin stickers. So, I mean, that's kind of the thing. So, and I try to throw in some Bitcoin sticker shots in everything I do with them. But yeah, they are, I mean.
But you tour with the band. You do a lot of video for them
when I'm at concerts and stuff. When I'm called upon, yes. Mostly in Europe, though, Scardists have yet to conquer
the U.S.
The USA, the West.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there. But to answer your question, I don't really orange pill people that much, I think. Only when I'm asked. Mm-hmm. And then I give an honest answer. And I think it's actually easier to orange pill metalheads because I feel that Bitcoin and metal kind of share a lot. They have a lot in common in terms of the Freedom Act. Metal allows you to express yourself fully. Bitcoin does. And for me, personally, as a musician, found myself like deciding to go at a path where I devote my life, my entire life, to something I really wholeheartedly, fully believe in, even though other people kept, you know, telling me like, why, first of all, why have you chosen to be a musician? This is not a real profession. And once they realized that, okay, I am a musician, why metal? Nobody likes metal. It's a niche. Nobody listens to metal. You will never succeed as a metal musician. Prog metal? Are you insane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mental issues. What's this crazy coin you're on about metal? Prog.
But I've always believed that, you know, what I do truly allows me to express myself without any limits or boundaries. So I just went for it. And despite, you know, everything that everyone kept saying to me, and I feel like with Bitcoin, it's just exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I believe in this. And, you know, I make sure to dive deep, listen to the 40 hours per week so I can fully understand what I'm doing. Same as, you know, practicing 40 hours on my piano or whatever. And make sure I really know what I do, stand by what I do. And I think it's going into Bitcoin for me was so natural because it just...
Do musicians even have finances or savings or anything? No.
No, but I mean, in terms of a mindset, it just mm-hmm. fits right into this mindset.
It's a solution to a lot of things. I think you just quoted the end of Matrix without even noticing, and you haven't even watched it more than once. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. Mm-hmm. A world where anything is possible. It's metal, prog metal, and Bitcoin. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you. That's the end of the Matrix. It's very cool. So yeah, it's all very similar. It's all the same world. That's why, I mean, I'm not a musician, but in my, upbringing, I just gravitated towards metal. And when I heard Scardust, I was hooked as well. I'm really grateful for the people who are also Bitcoiners who introduced me to Scardust.
Definitely.
Years ago.
Yeah. I've experienced freedom through metal, personally. And I would consider Bitcoin, it's kind of like the financial mosh pit. You know what I mean? Like, you, well, when, you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have
That's
never experienced.
Perfect.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of our listeners, they've never experienced the wonders of being in a mosh pit.
I almost broke a rib once, yeah.
You should try it.
What's incredible about being in a mosh pit is, you're in there, you're, depending on the type of music, I think the type of music influences the type of mosh pit you are. The heavier the metal, the fatter and more intense the people in the mosh pit are. So, you know, if you're a little guy like Alex Fetsky, you know, you should probably be going to lighter metal concerts, the metalcore, screamo with the...
Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah, Avenged Sevenfold or like Bullet for My Valentine or, you know, somebody like that. Not necessarily Lamb of God or August Burns Red. But, you know, when you're in the mosh pit, you get knocked down on the ground. You know, people stop and they pick you up. They don't trample you. You know what I mean? It is a place, you know, where there's not necessarily rules being enforced by, I mean, depending on the venue, the security typically isn't right there on you, but it's like a self-governing ecosystem in a way that you can experience a lot of freedom, and you can dance like a goofball and look really goofy, but you just, you know, you have this very intense music that's just like coursing through your veins. And what I've experienced is just this feeling of being so alive during that process. And I think for many, you know, that are experiencing this, they seek out metal music, metal concerts specifically, because we're in a society of people that don't listen to Bitcoin podcasts, that don't read Ayn Rand, that, you know, live very boring and meaningless lives, and they're just kind of like stuck in the rat race, and they just want to feel something. And I feel like for so many, Bitcoin is a solution. Like my background, I used to work in traditional media, and you know, you would get your marching orders from your superiors to go write some sort of nonsensical fiat piece about nothing that was all propaganda and presented as news. And I almost died of alcoholism from that, because it was such a miserable experience. And that was the only way to do that. And in leaving that ecosystem into reporting on topics that matter, such as Bitcoin, was really life-giving. And that's the way I see kind of the overlap between metal and Bitcoin. I'm curious if you want to expand on that a little bit more.
It's very interesting. First of all, I do agree that in metal shows, I mean, the authorities aren't there. It's like a known thing. I mean, they leave it with the venue and the guards there to just be self-governing. And they're like, we'll deal with you later, just KYC or something, I don't know. But yeah, they do give you some freedom for the time of the show. Feels like that. And
there is a sense of trust.
There is a sense of trust.
And there is a sense of community.
I sometimes lose it at the venue guards. They sometimes are fiat-minded people as well. You won't see a authority figure, real one, I mean, in a metal show. But
most metal concerts, like most metal fans, are just, you know, nice little care bears.
Yeah, geeks. With
we just want to, you know, express themselves. And
yeah,
like you said, it's the those, you know, these extreme emotions that need a platform.
And I can really relate with the second part. I also used to work in media and propaganda, and I was looking for meaning in life, and I found an actual solution after, you know, after all the hardship and the being lost, and you stumble upon Bitcoin, and it makes sense, and it gives you that, just like the music. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say mosh pits, they're a lot like Bitcoin meetups, you know, where, you know, if somebody comes into the mosh pit and starts like throwing punches or something, like everybody turns on them and sticks together and roots them out. You get a shitcoiner. You got a shitcoiner that comes and starts talking about XRP in the meetup. It's the same thing. They get handled pretty thoroughly.
Also, like, you know, from an educational point of view, I've studied in a lot of academies and with a lot of teachers and with many different methods. And I think like that there's the fiat-minded methods and academies that tell you, you cannot do this or this or this. Like, you cannot sing this loud. You cannot use this vocal effect. You cannot use this dynamic range. And then there are the methods that tell you, do whatever the you want. And I would lean more towards those. And it was only when I realized what can be done in music, what can be done with the voice, what can be done with, you know, compositions and arrangements and whatnot, that I've decided to start a progressive metal band, because it allowed me to, okay, I can fully express myself now. And I feel exactly the same when it comes to the solution, the Bitcoin gives, if that makes sense.
Well, I feel like there's all these bands that are kind of trending in the same direction. Like, you listen to like Fall Out Boy, today, or I forgot what the other one was that was kind of like emo rock like that. But they're all trending in the same direction. They all sound the same. And what I find interesting about you guys is incredibly different. Like, I have yet to see any other band really put out a Bitcoin-themed music video. And I almost feel like it's kind of risky in some ways because it is polarizing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had to be brave.
You always have to be brave if you want to do something meaningful.
And also you have to be confident. Like, you understand something. It's the other 80% who doesn't. But you understand it, so nothing they can say makes sense if you understand something that they don't.
Yeah, I also think, like, this video, we're not sharing any opinion. We're just presenting a story.
Well, I did throw in that there is no second fucking best sailor.
That's an Easter egg.
But yeah, I actually think some of the old punk rock bands, maybe not Fall Out Boy, but some of them did have the good messaging. I mean, I grew up on that. Probably did a good job raising me.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope they found Bitcoin.
You would think there would be an overlap, but we're seeing like bands like Rage Against the Machine turn into Rage for the Vaccine.
Yeah, what the fuck?
But I do think this is like a real opportunity right now to use music as a method to really present a message that matters and resonates with people. And I think that's one of the things that's very disappointing with a lot of the mainstream music today is that I don't think it's doing that. It just doesn't do it for me. It's very rare that I'll find a band, a lot of them exist out there for sure, but I do think it's rare, and that's what makes it so valuable when somebody does.
There's so much fiat music out there. It's more than 80% fiat music, and I hate fiat music.
Yeah, I don't listen to the radio anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
Yes.
I listen to 40 hours. There is no time to listen to the radio.
Yeah. 40 hours Beats Radio every day.
Well, I want to play a little bit clip from your song My Haven, which is I believe another recent release, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
It's from the new album that's about to come out. Yes. Which play. Is amazing. I've heard it. It's really, really good, and it's not out yet. The world plays.
Incomplete. I've been through hell and back. While they're screaming my name is a symbol of shame, so I hold your hand tight as I shout. Yeah, what? So first of all, what did the writing process for this song look like? What was the inspiration?
Very similar to Rip. I came up with the initial lyrics, the initial idea, and then we kind of developed it together. It's about keeping your seed safe. Should I go into it?
I mean, should we? It was influenced by events, real events.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Obviously,
I mean,
it's about Bitcoin as well, but it's also like an Israeli thing.
It's a response. Well, okay, so the lyrics are written in a way that I hope everyone can relate to with, you know, having a safe haven. Because very often our safe haven is not perfect. Whether, you know, it's our home or our partner or our pet or, you know, a mountain, whatever. Whatever is your safe haven, it's often not a perfect place, but it's still the place where you feel the safest. You feel like it's, you know, your own, and you can be yourself there and you can feel safe there. But it was triggered by a response to people not realizing why we need Israel. And it was, you know, kind of fueled by the October 7th events and people not realizing why we need this place at all. So it was kind of a response to that. Mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, I travel the world, but I always have to hide my passport. I don't want people to know where I'm from. I speak English abroad. I don't dare to speak my own language because I'm afraid. I don't feel safe, you know? So this is actually here where I live in Israel is the only place where I actually feel safe, despite, you know, everything that is going on.
It's a place where you don't have to OPSEC.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, as an Anbrin and Rida and, so to speak, anarchist, I would think that, I mean, I would challenge some of these ideas, but yeah, basically, not country itself, but the place where you can keep your seat safe and you don't have to OPSEC. I mean, maybe, in my opinion, I would relate to that in that way.
Yeah.
But to each their own.
Yeah, the topic of Israel and Jews in general has become very controversial, I think more so recently than prior. You know, my stance on it personally is I see a lot of value in Jewish people for multiple reasons. One of the primary reasons is because I want good, like, movies and TV shows. And, you know, we've seen, like, a steep decline in Hollywood with this DEI policies, yeah, which, you know, has been an attempt to get the Jews out of Hollywood. And what has resulted is bad movies, bad TV shows.
Haven't thought about it like that, but yeah, that makes sense, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, the context I come from, I dealt with American Jews a lot, which is definitely very different than Israeli Jews. And that's something I've been learning about recently.
So almost as if it doesn't matter.
What do you mean?
I mean, if you're a Jew or not, you're just different people. It's just the culture or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, there's definitely a lot of different cultural nuances here. So, like, you know, for one, as far as I've seen, Israeli Jewish women are hot. American Jewish women, not so much.
It's the M16s on your back and the loose pants, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. So, like, I definitely have some anarchist tendencies as well. I kind of, if I were to ascribe ideology to myself, I'd call myself a cigarette capitalist. But so what is it like to live in the state of Israel, being an anarchist? What's that like?
Been told I'm crazy since I remember, since I found Bitcoin, I guess. Found, I mean, understood. You don't really find it, you just understand it, and it's a matter of luck when you understand it. I mean, it's not something you have to believe in if you understand that what it is. It's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
So it changes you, and everybody thinks you're crazy, but they can have fun staying poor.
So I'm sure it's a pretty unpopular viewpoint to have living over there.
I mean, I surrounded myself with the community that it is popular in, but the wider variety, I mean, most people in Israel are NPCs, in my opinion. Most people everywhere. And it doesn't really matter if you're Jewish or not. You're either an NPC and you don't understand stuff or you're not. Yes, I find it really, really annoying that some non-NPC people turn into NPC people because they want to murder me for not doing anything and just being alive. And I cannot help being born. So that's annoying, and that violates the NAP, I would guess. That's how you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
the no aggression principle.
Yeah, so that's just my experience here. Also, the regulation, it's a demon to fight, but at least I don't have to OPSEC something that I have no control over here, I guess. It's just default not to be... It is very dangerous anyway, so that's... But it's a statistics thing. But that's just me. I mean, other people have other opinions.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is, I'm inferring a little bit based on what you're describing, which is individuals get caught in the crossfire of the machinations of governments and other powerful individuals with agendas, and there's not really a whole lot of choice in it. And so, like, Noah, when I hear you describe, like, hiding your passport or when you travel abroad and not wanting to share, I mean, that's not really a representation. Or at least the way I'm hearing it, it's not really a representation of the decisions you've made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, you can't help it. I mean, you were just born.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your fault. And you haven't done anything. And it's just a collective kind of view, which is so stupid, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Hating people for a collective name tag. Yes, and I bet these people don't listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts per week, which makes them so stupid.
Probably. Well, if they did, they'd realize quite a few of the podcasters are Jewish as well.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
So, you know, before we were recording this, one of the things that you mentioned to me is that you guys had to run down to the bomb shelter for a little bit. I mean, that's an interesting experience. I've never experienced anything like that. I bet there's some epic orange peeling opportunities in bomb shelters because you have a captive audience.
Yeah, in big cities.
Yeah, you have a captive audience for 10 minutes. It's like for a block. You have to stay there in the bomb shelter after the siren ends for 10 minutes, which is exactly like an average block's time. So you have to orange peel people in the time of a block, and then it's over. So it's like a race. You can play a game, actually. And maybe every time, I mean, every missile that comes, you get another block to continue the peeling.
Mm.
But how does orange peeling even help if people don't actually go home and listen to 40 hours per week?
It's just beginning.
It's a part of orange peeling them, getting them,
I guess,
to listen to the 40 hours. Otherwise.
So we need more war and more missiles to get more block time. It's like block space, but block time in the shelter with a captive audience. No, I used to own a shelter.
I used to.
Like a big shelter where she used to do all the rehearsals and her choir stuff. She used to get it on lease or something. She just had to pay the electricity and maybe volunteer in the community for some. And then she got this huge real estate of a huge bomb shelter to do all the music in.
Yeah, we wrote a lot of music there in this shelter.
Yeah. I mean, at war times, yeah. Sorry.
I just think, like, you know, conflict and adversity is really an opportunity to reach into yourself and respond to it with creativity, because it brings like a whole different level of depth and meaning. So,
yeah, for sure.
This song, My Haven. So, you know, dealing with all the like anxiety culturally and the confusion and conflict, like what things are this haven? What is this song, you know, pointing to?
This place, I guess. Yeah. The pre-chorus says, like, we've been through hell and back, obviously speaks about historical events and calling our name is a symbol of shame. You know, historical events. Unfortunately, not just as historical. It's, you know, it's happening now as well. And then the chorus, "You are my haven," kind of invites the audience to participate so everyone can join in and shout their hearts out. And every person can relate with, you know, their own haven in mind, I guess. Because everyone...
Music is objective, I guess.
Everyone has their own haven.
It's a very crowd song to do in live shows as well. With the "you."
Yeah, it's like a call and response thing. "You, yeah." This kind of.
And then she explodes her voice.
I really look forward to experiencing it in person someday. It's one of my goals. Well, very cool. So you have a new album coming out. We talked about doing an announcement of an announcement. So the official announcement is coming out here a little bit.
Yeah, probably next month.
2 weeks, trademark.
Gosh, that term's so triggering. I'm sure it's triggering for you guys too, because from what I remember, it sounds like Fauci robbed you of the ability to break into the American market. But yeah, let's hear about the album.
Yeah, it's coming out this year, probably around summer.
It has a guest singer everybody knows about already.
Yeah, it has a guest. No, nobody knows about it.
But everybody was at the show knows about it.
Well, they know he sang at the show. They don't know he is in the album. Well, now you spoiled everyone's surprise. So
get the hype up already.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have some exciting guests on the album. We have a guest singer from a very, very cool prog metal band. We have another guest violinist in one of the songs. We have the Turkish orchestra in RIP. We have a whole choir featured in the entire album and on all the tracks.
And an orchestra.
And a strings quartet. Oh, and we have a Jewish-Arab orchestra featured in one of the tracks that is actually very cool. It's like an orchestra based in Tel Aviv. Young people, half Arabs, half Jews. And they played a song with us on the album. The album is, you know, if you're a Skardist fan, it will give you your favorite elements of, you know, the Disney metal aspect and the progginess and the complexity of the music with the poppy, catchy choruses and the crowd sing-alongs. It has it all.
And also some masterpieces, which are just amazing. I mean,
if you're just a metal fan or a prog fan, you will have the big epos, the big like 15 minutes piece that talks about the story of Pygmalion from the Greek mythology in three parts. And
it's really good.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing you've ever done.
Thank you. And yeah, you have the Disney ballad and you have the crazy prog song with the heavy riffs and the growls. I think you have all extremes on this album.
And you said, is it coming out in April? Or you're just announcing it's coming out in April.
The announcement of the announcement will probably be announced in April.
Just 2 weeks. Just building the hype.
Well, it's I not wish. Just up to us. Yeah, because we, you know, we work with the record label and social media stuff and whatever. So it's not just up to us.
It's a good point, actually. Before this album, they just signed with Frontiers Records, which is a big Italian record label.
Yeah.
That's a big thing that happened, and then they did the album for them. Yeah. So it should be a big thing. It's just taking its time because you have to announce all these announcements.
The label wanted to make sure that we get as much as possible out of the releases. They really wanted to release, you know, individual singles with music videos and kind of spreading them over a significant period. This was kind of their strategy around this album.
Mm-hmm.
Hope it works. Time will tell, I guess. Yeah.
I'm excited to hear it come out. I'm kind of frustrated right now, though, because I feel like I'm getting teased.
I'm frustrated even more for knowing that this exists and people can't hear it.
Uh-huh. But, well, this is part about being a Bitcoiner, you know, is just having an attitude of low time preference. We can be patient.
Low time preference, yeah.
We can be patient.
Exactly.
It'll pump. The album will pump eventually.
I mean, we've got
to wait for the halving.
Yeah. Well, we found another similarity.
Yeah. Eventually the album will pump.
But it's not like pop, because in pop you can, you know, you can work
pop
on a song.
Shit coins. They pump and dump.
It takes you like 2 weeks to work on a song, and then it has a really high peak, and then people forget about it.
Yeah, no, you're building for the long run.
Long run, yeah.
Yes. Exactly. We need the music go up, technology is being built.
I think one of the good things about working with an Italian record label is Italians like to smoke cigarettes. So they're typically a little ahead of the curve of some other cultures. Mm-hmm. They would like make you eat a lot of pizza and stuff. Or what's it like working with an Italian record label versus other cultures?
I mean, it feels like they're Israeli because we're so similar.
Yeah, Israel and Italy is like really similar.
Very similar.
Dynamics.
Lots of cigarette smoking in Israel too?
Yeah. Or what? And bad drivers. Yeah, it's the same.
Well, I got to get a good answer. So, like, what's your speculation? Why are Israeli Jews so much hotter than American Jews?
It's the M6 walking around in civilian clothes with an M16 on your back. I mean, there is I mean, some girls get the Tavor. I'm not sure if even girls get the Tavor because it's not hot. I mean, it's a superior firearm, but it's not as hot as an M16 or an M4 on your back, I think. That's what it is. And also maybe some Israeli women are not NPCs, I would think. There is maybe they're the bigger demographic of non-NPC women. I mean, they exist, of course. It's the 80% rule, but that would be my speculation.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a very prevalent gun culture in the United States, but as a kind of common stereotype, American Jewish women do not like guns very frequently.
Yeah. Well, here you have to, or you get stabbed in the back, literally. Wish I had a gun.
Guns are fun.
Yeah, you can't get them here. I mean, if you're not in the army or whatever, but mm-hmm. sometimes if you were, it depends. It's a hard process. Mm-hmm. It's not like in the USA.
Well, closing out the episode, I'm going to play Arrowhead as the outro song. That's, we were talking before, that's, I think, Lahav, you described that as the gateway drug.
Song. Yeah, it's a good fucking song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, closing out, do you have any thoughts on that song that you wanted to leave on?
Well, the lyrics are just temporary lyrics. I just took quotes from my ex-boyfriend and I placed them as like placeholder lyrics.
And it's your best song. I mean, not the best song because the best songs are on the new album, but it's the gateway drug. I mean, it hooks most people. It's a really good song, Arrowhead.
Very cool. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
There was something we needed to share. I mean, Noah wanted to share, I think.
Did I? No, I just, you know, wholeheartedly recommend to listen to 40 hours per week. 40 hours I seek. 40 hours per week. 40 hours I seek. And that's just a start. That's it. This is all I wanted to say.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Noah and Lahav, for coming on the show. It was great to hear a bit about your music. Give me the opportunity to poke and ask questions. I still don't think
thank
we have...
Thank you for having us.
Think we have... I think the question of why Israeli women are hotter than American Jews, we need to probably explore that a little bit more. But I'm excited to hear the new album.
It's probably the hummus. I'm trying to think about, you know, what could it possibly be?
It's the genome. It's all the gene pools. Everybody from all the world together. I mean, we can explore it, yes. I mean, people from all the world came here and reproduced and created very beautiful specimens.
Probably has to do with the adversity, too. Like, there's a little bit more of an adversarial environment.
Good thing there's no debate about it, though. I mean, it's a fact.
I thought it was just a marketing ploy, and then I started doing some research on it and talking to some of my friends that had been to Israel quite a bit, and they told me it was not a marketing ploy. But yeah, I mean, the American Jewish women, they grow up. I think there's less seed oils over there. I think that's one thing.
Maybe less corn syrup.
Mm-hmm. Less corn syrup.
Less hummus.
The hummus doesn't have any seed oils as well, yes.
I mean, the hummus is not real.
More olive oil than
anywhere other than Israel. It's not a real hummus, you know?
Debatable. But maybe. But it was a really, really big honor to be a part of someone's 40 hours per week somewhere.
Yeah, that's like a dream come true.
Yes.
Thank you.
Timeless glory is what you're running for. Even if I offer my eternal soul, I'm waiting for your mind to let you know. All your heart is what I'm aching for. I love it when you're looking with your eyes, finding me alone, I'm begging, don't you go. Arrowhead pointed towards the sun, up beyond the sky is where you're aiming. You don't know them, you don't know us. What's the rush? You're not even happy when it's raining. Tell me, will you ever look me in the eyes? Sitting on the nightmare, darling, don't you go. Broke the lock, went out a door, and watch me fall apart. You know it's not my fault, so find your own answer. Stop waving me and please take me. Take your baby air.